Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes with DailyStraits.com. In this episode, we break away from our usual entrepreneurial chit-chat and speak to Chris Humphrey, the Executive Director of EU Asian Business Council. Chris began his varied professional career as a UK civil servant, where, among other things, he was a private secretary to a minister and an air services trade negotiator covering the Asian Pacific region. After leaving the government, Chris moved to the private sector, working initially in the government and external relations teams at two British airlines, before moving to Shanghai, China, with Virgin Atlantic, where he headed up the airline's China operation and oversaw the rapid expansion of their business in China. Chris has now been in Singapore for over a decade and has been running the EU Asian Business Council since its formal inception in 2014, where he has overseen a 325% increase in its membership and helped make the Business Council the foremost business body for the European industry in ASEAN. Without further ado, let's get Chris to the show and ask him all things about the organization he helms and more. So hi, Chris. Thank you for joining us today from Singapore.
Yeah, hi, June. Thank you very much for having me on. Looking forward to the discussion.
Awesome. Great. So we'll dive right into the question. So, okay, I did tell you, since this show has got a lot of American listeners, so they might be in the blur as into what ASEAN is. So if you could just give us a snippet, you know, I know it's something like the European Union, but, you know, what is really ASEAN for you? Can you just give us an explanation in a nutshell, please?
Yeah, sure. It's the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, covering 10 countries here in Southeast Asia. Not quite like the EU. It's a much looser grouping. There's no supranational body for it, so they work very much by consensus. But they've been around now for 56 years, I believe it is, and they cover a number of different areas, political, security, social, cultural, and, for as I'm concerned, economic integration.
Awesome, great. So you have been, you know, helming the EU ASEAN Business Council since 2014. So, what does it do, basically? What does the organization do?
Well, we were set up really with one broad mission in mind, which was to improve the trade and investment relationship between Europe and Southeast Asia. So that means for European industry, our role really is to make the business climate here better for them, and they'll enable them to invest more in the region, trade more with the region, and generally help their consumers and their employees and the communities that they work in.
Awesome, great. All right. So so the council is headed, basically the headquarters is in Singapore, right? Do they have other small bodies throughout the other Asian countries, or is just one body?
So we're headquartered here in Singapore. We do have in our membership all of the European chambers of commerce that exist in Southeast Asia. So there are 9 of those, one for each country except for Brunei. And we work with them when it comes to dealing with local issues in each market.
Okay, tell me a bit about the council. Like who pays for the upkeep and how does it work? Like, do you get money from the European Council in Europe? Or how does the running, the day-to-day running, where do you get the money and stuff like that?
Absolutely. We don't take any money at all from governments anywhere in the world. We are purely funded by our members, which means by our multinational corporations who are our members. There are 45 of those today, some of the biggest household names you would know from European industry, from a multitude of sectors, automotive, financial services, renewable energies, consumer goods, etc. So we're completely funded by our membership and through sponsorships and any event money that we manage to raise throughout the year. That means we are completely independent of the European Commission or of European national governments or indeed governments here in Southeast Asia.
So are you basically an NGO and in that sort, or probably
well,
what?
Officially, we're a registered society. We're a not-for-profit body. But yes, you would describe us as a non-governmental organization.
Awesome. So how many people are with the EU Council? Like what the headcount of staff?
Well, we're a small, compact, and very hardworking unit. There are four of us here. You compared us to other longer established business councils. We are a very small team, but I think we punch way above our weight.
Okay, great. So you said just now that you are funded by membership, that you help businesses, you know, basically it's European businesses who want to set a footprint in ASEAN countries. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Many of them have been here for many, many years. I mean, some of our members actually have been in the region for over a century already. So they are pretty well established, but they all still face problems around market access, rules and regulations to trade. And our job is to basically help navigate those issues.
Okay, so you help them with the nitty-gritty of like what, contracts or setting base in a factory in XYZ country?
No, we really help them with advocacy work or trying to get changes in government rules and regulations to improve the investment and trading climate for them, trying to remove non-tariff barriers to trade, get governments to be more open to external investment.
Awesome. Okay, great. What are some of the challenges that EU countries are facing in doing business in Asian countries to date, especially now with COVID?
Well, I think COVID has brought a whole unique set of problems for everybody in the region, whether they're foreign firms or local companies. And obviously our hearts go out to everyone that's been adversely affected by it. The pandemic has had a massive impact on everyone's lives and their livelihoods, their mental health, and also, of course, on the economy. And certainly last year, at the height of the pandemic and all the lockdowns, our members and other companies were facing significant issues with their supply chains, with moving goods around the region. And of course, today, still having lockdowns and preventing people from moving around the region as well. Beyond the pandemic, before the pandemic, there were issues around, particularly on market access, negative investment lists in much of the region. So certain parts of the economy were closed off to foreign investment or foreign investment heavily restricted. And then just the sheer range of non-tariff barriers for the movement of goods and services in the region. So whilst the 10 ASEAN member states aspire to be a combined, cohesive, highly integrated economic bloc, I'm afraid they're not. They have many different standards and rules that you need to abide by.
Okay, great. So you did say there was a press release, I think, that said that, you know, the number of investments from EU to ASEAN countries have fallen. Is that right? Or am I?
No. Traditionally, the EU has always been the largest source of foreign direct investment to ASEAN. Unfortunately, over the last couple of years, we have slipped down the ladder. Part of that is being corrections in previous monies that were coming in from elsewhere and they weren't being accounted for properly. But there has been a slackening off of investment from the EU to ASEAN. In fact, I would say ASEAN as a whole has seen its FDI no better than flat. And indeed, from its various dialogue partners, you know, the EU, the US, Japan, and other big players, the money coming in has been actually on the wane over the last couple of years.
Do you have any figures, like what was it before and what now? How much it's gone down?
Well, actually, last year, the EU ended up being the second largest investor in the region. And the numbers overall are pretty huge, given our historic levels. So over the last few years, over the last 3 or 4 years, investments from the EU have been somewhere around $100 billion.
And that's a drop, right? What was it before?
Well, that's over the last 4 years. Last year, actually, it was an uptick. I think last year we were up around about $20 billion. And the year before, in fact, it was down to $16 billion. So it does go up and down. It does tend to be a bit cyclical. And that, you know, investments in companies can be quite lumpy at times when you're making very large investments for new factories.
Yeah. So who was number one? Are they the Americans?
Last year, I believe the number one was the United States, yes.
Awesome. Okay, great. All right, so you see, unlike the EU, many Asian countries are still underdeveloped. So Do you see this as a hindrance? Because, you know, you have to go through hoops and loops to get things done, or are you used to that and you'll be able to, I mean, you're able to get things done easily?
I think everybody doing business here in Southeast Asia, and that includes local businesses as well, find there are a number of difficulties in navigating rules and regulations in each country. There are different testing standards, for instance, in the automotive sector between different parts of the region. It's also true for healthcare, for cosmetics, and a whole different number of sectors. So everyone faces challenges, and a lot of those challenges are down really just to navigating the differences and the subtleties between the rules and regulations in each country. That said, I mean, I would always say this, Southeast Asia is a bright spot, I think, on the global economy. It's an area that's been showing pre-pandemic fantastic growth rates, and those growth rates will return because the underlying fundamentals are still there. It is a relatively young region, great urbanization rates, expanding middle classes, a very highly skilled and generally well-educated workforce as well. So it's a region that has lots of promise still. Realizing that promise will depend upon the ASEAN member states, I think, working even closer and even more collaboratively with each other and trying to remove some of those barriers that exist between them.
Okay, you did say in one of the press releases that sparked this interview, I was interested because you said one of the main reasons for the region being unable to deliver on its promise on existing ideas. So has there been a lot of talk in Asian, okay, we'll do this, we'll do that, but they never follow up?
They've made a long list of promises, Jane. I mean, there's a thing called the ASEAN Economic Community, which is the aim to create a single market and production base between the 10 countries and a highly integrated and cohesive economy as well. And within that, there are promises to remove non-tariff barriers, to simplify customs procedures, to harmonize standards amongst themselves, to put in place things, the right bedrocks to develop a digital economy in the region. Some people might say the promises that have been made were a bit too much for them to take up. Progress has been slow, partly because the ASEAN way, working through consensus. Nothing wrong with that. That means you are all moving together. But it also means you tend to be moving at the pace of the slowest country. Have they delivered? No. Consistently, we do a survey every year of European industry in the region. That survey consistently shows that we all think ASEAN economic community is moving far too slow, that non-tariff barriers to trade, something they're meant to be eliminating, are actually on the increase. They're not decreasing. So I think there's a lot of work to do. To be fair to ASEAN, actually, last year, despite the pandemic, some key milestones were hit by them in terms of the ASEAN single window for customs, the ASEAN customs transit system, programs to allow companies to do self-certification for some areas. So there was progress made, but a lot more needs to be done, and I think sleeves need to be rolled up. And particularly now, when we're in this hopefully soon to be post-pandemic world, ASEAN needs to make sure that it remains attractive for trade and investment in what's going to become an increasingly competitive landscape.
Awesome. Okay, great. So what is ASEAN's biggest competitor? Is it China?
I think everyone sees China as the competitor. To use an American phrase, as you have a largely American audience, China is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and I think it will be for a very long time. But it's not really ASEAN's competitor. I don't think ASEAN would see anyone being its competitor. They would see them as being complementary to other large trading groups, whether that's the US or the EU or China. ASEAN is very good at being the friend of all of them.
Okay, great. All right, so I was wondering, right, which countries are the EU interested in trading in? Do they have any particular liking, maybe Vietnam? Or do you have figures of which country in Asia had the most number of investments from the EU?
Well, in terms of FDI flows from the EU, about 80% of the FDI flows from the EU to Southeast Asia land in Singapore first. And that's because Singapore is a a regional hub, a regional finance center. Lots of European firms tend to have their treasury function sitting in Singapore. It doesn't mean the money stays here, that most of it doesn't. Most of it flows out from Singapore to elsewhere in the region. To answer your question, Vietnam is a bit of a darling at the moment, and that's partly because it has a newly minted FTA in place with the EU, and also because Vietnam is part of CPTPP, and of course now part of RCEP, and is showing some pretty progressive policies in terms of opening up for investments, and has clearly positioned itself as an alternative to China when you're setting up manufacturing as well. So Vietnam, very much in favor. As I mentioned earlier, we do these surveys every year, and I can tell you that the preliminary analysis for this year's one is showing that the markets which European firms are looking to expand more in are Singapore and Vietnam at the top, and then Thailand and Indonesia.
Okay, so what kind of sectors are we looking at? Are they food, manufacturing, auto manufacturing? What kind of sectors would this European Union companies want to set footprint in ASEAN?
Well, certainly when it comes down to expansion plans, the manufacturing sector as a whole, which is looking at it with more energy perhaps and more enthusiasm than the services sector. And on the manufacturing side, you know, we have large investments in things like the automotive sector. I know Michelin, for instance, done large investments in Indonesia in recent times. A lot of interest from the European industry in Southeast Asia. Chemicals, petrochemicals, and then, of course, FMCG as well. I mean, this is a region which, as you know, loves its food, loves its consumer goods, and therefore it's very attractive for European industry.
Okay, so even with COVID still, because, you know, in Indonesia, COVID is really bad still, and I'm not sure what's happening in Vietnam. Malaysia is quite bad as well. So they're still showing interest, or they're just holding their horses first and then waiting, adopting a wait and see kind of thing?
Well, I think that's true for all industry. Certainly last year, there was certainly a feeling from many companies, not just European ones, but others, that, you know, let's preserve our cash, let's not make big investment decisions right now. We don't know how this is going to pan out, how it's going to last. I think the recent spikes we've seen here in Southeast Asia and the situation in Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, and Malaysia has been particularly bad, means that companies will hold off a bit. It's difficult to make big investments when you're having difficulty traveling to countries, seeing the issues on the ground, meeting officials, meeting your partners. It's hard to do everything over Zoom. You've got to actually see someone, shake their hands, and see the place you're investing in. So I think in that respect, we've all got to work hard, everyone, private, public sector, to try and beat this pandemic. And the only way to do that actually is vaccine rollouts, getting more people vaccinated, and then starting the process of reopening borders.
Awesome. Okay. So you were talking a lot about big businesses. I just wondered if there were any startups in European Union's would want to, you know, have you dealt with startups? Because, you know, ASEAN, like you said, the workforce is very good. They are also very cheap. So are there, do startups approach you for help?
We don't deal with SMEs or startups for the main part. We as an organization are dealing exclusively with large corporations. The European chambers do lots of work with smaller companies. We do get inquiries about, you know, what's the market like? How can we access it? And we'll try and direct them where we can. There is an awful lot of interest here in Southeast Asia for European business, both large and small. And I think increasingly you'll see a lot more startups coming in from the digital space and also in the sustainability areas as well.
Okay, great. So tell me, in terms of European Union countries, the top three countries that are interested to do business in ASEAN, are they, I think I can guess, maybe Germany, France, and I don't know, the third one, you have to help me out here.
If you're looking at money flows, Netherlands would be in the top three. Although, again, I don't think it's all Dutch money. A lot of that is moving under double taxation agreements. But yes, the Germans are extremely active. They form actually the biggest grouping in our membership at the Business Council. The French and the Italians as well, very, very active, and the Dutch. And then outside of the EU, we're talking about broader Europe, Switzerland and the UK are also big players.
Yeah, so the UK has just come out of the EU. So, and you're British, I assume, right? Because you were working with them. So how does that work? Like, do you still help the UK businesses? Because, you know, they're not part of EU actually right now. So
despite the name of the Business Council being the EU ASEAN Business Council, we actually have members from across Europe. So members can come from the EU, the European Free Trade Area, so like the Swiss, and also any country which was part of the EU. So we still have a significant number of British headquartered companies, although I must say every single one of them has very large investments and interests in the EU as well.
You did say that there was a flattening of foreign direct investments coming into the region. So how much has there been a fall in the trade?
Actually, I think ASEAN trade last year, surprisingly, because I think everyone was predicting a big dip in it, actually held up pretty well. So last year, I was surprised. I was running some numbers fairly recently for some meetings we got coming up. And the trade with Europe in 2020 actually increased slightly over 2019. So trade with Europe in 2020 for ASEAN was above $250 billion US dollars. And that was an increase over what it was the year before when it was a shade under $250 billion. So surprisingly, given the pandemic and all the lockdowns, trade held up pretty well from Europe to ASEAN last year.
Okay, great. That's great. So this has got nothing to do with the council, but I was just wondering, have you ever heard of the ASEAN having aspirations to have its own currency?
I've had questions about that almost every year for the last 7 years doing this job, and the answer is no, and I would never see it coming either. For that to happen, ASEAN would need to be a lot more closely aligned than it currently is. I would never see an ASEAN currency happening.
All right, great. And what about, you know, this tariffs things? Because, you know, ASEAN countries, right, each of the government is like, a lot of them are problematic. Many of them are corrupted. So, you know, and, you know, it's very different from the European Union where they are so systematic and they do things by the book. And does this come into as a challenge for any of your work?
There are certainly challenges. We have regularly cited customs procedures as being a big issue in the region. I would say in my time doing this job, we have seen significant improvements with customs across Southeast Asia. They are more and more automating their procedures, which means the scope for extracurricular financial activity is getting less and less, and your companies are finding it easier. The rules are much clearer than they used to be. There's still room for improvement, still a long way to go, but things have got better in that respect.
Okay. All right. For the final question, this is up to you if you want to answer. How do you charge them? Do you charge them from the membership, right? Is it a fixed fee monthly, or you charge them as part of their whatever they make in the region, a cut you get from that? How does that work?
It's a flat fee. It's a flat membership structure. It's an annual fee based on a calendar year. So you join, you're with us for the whole of the year, and everyone pays the same amount of money. Doesn't matter how big they are.
Oh, okay. Doesn't matter how big or that, because some people, they would say, okay, if you make X amount, you pay this much. And if you make XXX, you pay that much. You know, the fees structured differently based on the revenue they make.
Yeah, that's certainly true with some trade associations. I've heard that based on either local or global turnover, the fee gets adjusted. But for us, no, it's a flat fee.
It's a flat fee. All right. And it's going to be, this council is going to be in around forever, or?
Well, I hope so. I hope we're going to be around forever. Certainly, I'm perfectly happy doing this job. I hope my members are happy with me doing the job, so I intend to hang around. I think there's a lot of work to be done in Southeast Asia. There are more partnerships to be formed. There is more help and assistance we can give each other. ASEAN needs its friends, and its friends like us need ASEAN. So as long as that's true, there'll be a business council.
What about expansion plans for the council? Are you hiring or opening up new business councils in the region?
We were always looking to expand, looking to add more members all the time. We had a new member yesterday, actually. So when we get a few more members on board, we'll add more staff, and then we'll expand our reach even.
Awesome. All right. And that is all the time that we have for today. We have just been speaking to Chris Humphrey, the Executive Director of EU ASEAN Business Council. Thank you, Chris, for speaking with us today.
Thank you, June. Very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
Awesome. The pleasure is all ours. Be sure to join us next week, where we aim to interview another awesome individual such as Chris. Thank you.